take this opportunity to welcome you on our virtual meeting on the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. I would like to also take the opportunity to welcome our executive in the ministry. I've seen the Deputy Minister of Old Dominion is with us, Sibal Kour. We are most welcome. I'd like to welcome the officials of the department and the entities that have been able to join me. Honorable members, it gives me a great pleasure to welcome you all back to our virtual Portfolio Committee meeting on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. Yes, we have a cause for celebration today, as His Excellency President Cyril Matamela Ramaphosa announced South Africa's return to level one lockdown. We urge you, honorable members, and your respective constituencies and sectors to remain vigilant and not repeat the same mistakes that we did at the end of the first lockdown, which resulted in the second wave. The consequences were devastating for many of us. It was a completely debilitating, with a high number of casualties, with many of us losing family members, colleagues, and friends. Before we welcome honorable members, the two presentations on the National Fresh Produce Market, as well as the Agricultural Products Agent Council, APEC, it's fitting to reflect how far we have come since Francisco de Almeida stopped at the Cape for fresh water, supplies, and cattle. The 1st of March, 1510, marked the Battle of Salt River, in which the Portuguese were defeated by the Goriqua Khoikhoi clan. Francisco de Almeida served as the viceroy to the Portuguese state of India from 1505 to 1509. Upon his successor taking over to his homeland, ships, that is the Garcia, Elem, and Santa Cruz, in late February, he dropped anchor near the Cape of Good Hope to replenish water. The Almeida and his men then traded with the Khoikhoi who lived in the area. By all accounts of these initial trades, they were cordial and both sides seemed to be satisfied. The Khoikhoi received iron in exchange for their cattle. This cordiality came to an end, though, when approximately 12 of the Portuguese sailors visited the Khoikhoi village and attempted to steal a number of cattle. The upset villagers then chased the sailors back into their ships. Upon reaching the safety of their ships, the sailors begged Almeida to take revenge upon the villagers who had defended their cattle. Even though Almeida admitted that his men were likely to blame for what had occurred, he led a party of 150 men armed with swords, lances, as well as crossbows to enact an unwarranted revenge. When they reached the village, they raided, seized a number of children and cattle. Approximately 170 Khoikhoi warriors fought back with stones and assegais. using their kettle as their shield, they routed the raiders, killing 64 of them, including Almeida and 11 of his captains. This devastating defeat put pause to the Portugal's run of victories in Africa and Asia, and opened the door for the Dutch and British to extend their colonial project, in the process making their own contributions to the agricultural history of South Africa. We therefore today, honorable members, today's presentation, play a critical role as an outlet for our agricultural products for the local market. As such, it is an important multiplier of creating jobs, providing an entry into the mainstream agricultural economy, unlocking opportunities for training, contributing to local food security, and expanding access to quality products and stimulating local economies. The Agricultural Product Agents Council demonstrates how far we have come since Europeans first sought to export our agricultural produce. The measures considered in the last presentation are an indication of the health of our agricultural exports and the need for regulation of agents. May our deliberations today be guided by the knowledge that agriculture was already established at the Cape before the colonial project began, and that this sector is intrinsically intertwined with our struggle for land reform and rural development historically and remains so to this day. We as a collective, honorable members, have the responsibility to advance this agenda in the realization that the full story that has yet not been told, and that we owe it to posterity to fill in the gaps and to build on the legacy of those who have gone before us. Those brave warriors who courageously defended their families, property, and land against disposition must be memorialized as the first heroes of our land and the fight to defend it. We likewise must define the struggles of our times and respond accordingly. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, and the officials of the department, I will now hand over to the Deputy Minister, Brenda Faure, we then delegate taking us through the presentation. Dlamini.
Chairperson, thank you very much, my Chairperson, and good morning to you and other members of the Portfolio Committee and our officials, and thanks for the astounding words you have used to open this meeting. And indeed, it's a very, very important contribution which reminds us of our journey and how far agriculture has started in the land. And we are here today to take forward those discussions. Of course, through your proper guidance as the Portfolio Committee, as a department, we will be listening and doing our bit to work to ensure that South Africans see the value and feel the benefit of belonging to a country that likes them or serves them. And I thank you for allowing us this opportunity. And I'm sure the acting DG is here or somebody representing him will be leading us. But thank you very much, Chairperson and other members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister. Ntate Ramasodi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The Department is here today to present two documents that were requested by the Portfolio Committee. One, the market profile of the agricultural value chain. That would include the national fresh produce markets. That presentation will be made by Mr. Stan Mantata. And we have got the socio-economic impact assessment report for the Agricultural Produce Agent Amendment Bill, which will be presented by Mr. Nakana Elvis. And lastly, Chair, in the discussions last week, there was a lot of indications from the Portfolio Committee around the agricultural projects. And we have got the CEO of the Mr. Francois Knowles, just to ensure that as the Portfolio Committee discusses the contents of the bill, there is also an understanding of how the Council currently functions because of the questions that were asked last week. The social impact assessment was done by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and we will also be sending the full 23 pages of the socio-economic impact assessment as done. On top of it, the market profile, there is a web document at 27 pages that we'll also be sending through so that honorable members can also engage broadly before they can have a discussion on the bill on both the profile, the impact, and also the concept. I'll now hand over to Mr. Senra Mantata to present the profile, and he'll be followed by Mr. Nakana to present the SIAS or the Social Economic Impact Assessment, and lastly APEC to be presented by the CEO, Mr. Knowles, with your concurrence, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ramasodi. Officials of the department may proceed with the presentation from the National Fresh Produce Markets.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and also members of the Portfolio Committee and the leadership of the department. My name is Stanford Mantata. I'll be presenting the state of national fresh produce markets as per the agreement in the previous engagement that we've had with the members of the committee. Basically, the presentation is aimed at giving a picture in terms of where we are in as far as the national fresh produce landscape is concerned, and also the measures and that the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development has taken throughout the years in dealing with the issues that are currently being faced by the national fresh produce market. So I believe that this information will be very useful to the committee members because as it was said by the DG that when you deliberate on the bid, also the produce market they are. So without the wasting of time, I'll quickly go through the presentation. Can I request that we move to the next slide? The second one, I think has gone to from the first slide to number five. Yes. In terms of the content, you'll see that we are going to take the members through the introduction and the background. As I've said, in terms of where the fresh produce markets are located within the fresh produce value chain. And then we will look at the project rebate in terms of what we as a department have done. We will also look at the code of best practices, and then we'll look at the challenges that the markets are currently facing. And we have got some recommendations and way forward that we are proposing as a department. Next slide. We can move to the introduction and the background. Yes. From our side, the question is why a national fresh produce market? For us, the national fresh produce markets are very, very much important, primarily because they, in a way, serve our constituency, which is the farmer. And again, they are a public marketing infrastructure that is critical in terms of food security and local economic development. Colleagues would remember that these national fresh produce markets are owned by the state, and they have been used by us as a state to play a critical role within the value chain. So for us, that is why we believe that they are very, 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 very much important. So what do they do? They primarily provide a low-cost marketing channel for farmers. What does that mean? What it means is that the farmers are currently in a position to can benefit from them in the sense that they provide what we call the channel. Because if one were to connect with other channels, such as your direct sales to retail or export, you would see that those the other two are quite high. We will demonstrate that later in terms of the costs that are involved when one is working through the national fresh produce market. Secondly, these fresh produce markets, they provide a trading facility for the fresh produce industry holder. As I've indicated that they serve farmers, they serve agents, they serve buyers, they serve everybody. So for us, they are very, 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 very much important. Again, they provide an outlet where the large buyers from the retail and others procure their fruit and vegetables. And again, they provide a facility for the hawkers. For us, this is quite critical, because if one looks at the statistics in terms of the people that are currently buying in the national fresh produce market, you see that almost 60% of the people that are buying there, they are hawkers. For us, that is a very, very important market. The hawkers are very, very, very important. They buy there, and one would also see that in the current setup, the fresh produce markets are the only channel that is geared towards supplying them. If you were to remove the fresh produce markets within the value chain, the hawkers will not have a place where they can procure their fruits and vegetables. So for us, it's quite important that we serve this market. Again, colleagues should know that the hawkers are very, very important, especially when it comes to the local economic development of various municipalities. It can be a municipality in a urban setting. It can be in a rural setting. They are very, very, very important in terms. again, the play a critical role in terms of the employment and also in terms of the number of people that benefit because they also have families that they feed. So all these things is about market. That is why for us are very preserved. Again, they form a price forming mechanism. Currently, they are being used as a reference point for national prices for fruits and vegetables. So you find that the prices that are normally used at the national fresh produce market, they end up being used as national prices. So if one were to remove that, it may cause a bit of instability. So for us, it's quite important that they are preserved. And then again, they provide a revenue for the municipality. We will illustrate later how that happens. Next slide. Yes. Again, the fresh produce market in South Africa. We currently have about 23 of them that are located in the country. And as of 2019, there were about 3.4 million tons that were being sold. Those are tons for fresh fruits and vegetables. That are sold in those markets, and as I've indicated earlier, you see that they have a combined turnover of about 17 billion. So you can see that these are big numbers in terms of the money that are being generated from there. And as I've indicated earlier, that they create a revenue stream for markets. You see that out of that 17 billion, almost 800 million goes straight to the coffers of various municipalities in the country, and about 1.2 billion would go to the agents that are currently operating there, and the rest of the money goes to the farmers. So you will see that they are very, very much important in that sense. So in terms of how they are placed in terms of ownership and management, you see that currently we have got four models that are being used. We've got what we call the departmental or business unit. We've got a corporatized, which is a municipal entity, and then you also have private and we also have an operated market. So basically, this is how they are classified. Before I move to the next slide, again, one would also see that from that 7 billion, maybe 17 billion that we've talked about, you see that as it stands now, Joburg Market together with Tshwane, Cape Town and Durban are your leading fresh produce market with a combined turnover of about, with a combined market share of about 82%. So you can see that these four markets are quite big and dominant, and they are followed by what one can call medium markets. That is your Springs, your Bloemfontein, your Maritzburg, your Islandan, and PE. So those would take about 12% of the market share, which is very, very small. And then after that, then you'd have those smaller markets. That is your markets like your Gay, in Mthatha, Witbank, in Emalahleni, Emachabeng, at Telkom and Salt Lake and so on. Those are very, very small markets. They take about 6% of the market share, which is very, 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 very small. So moving back to the departmental options in terms of how markets are classified, you see on this one, we have tried to categorize them in terms of how they are being owned and managed. On the first category, as I've indicated, that the first category is the municipal owned and operated setup. You see that there, what normally happens is that a fresh produce market will be placed within a municipality. It will operate like a directorate within the municipality, where they will normally report to either the head of the local economic development, and then you've got others where they will report to their corporate services, and then you've got those, some that will report to their CFOs. So basically, that's how the majority of those markets are classified. You see that a market like Tshwane and Durban, as well as Maritzburg, they report to their head of the Springs, whereas a market and Machabi, they report to their CFOs. So that's how some majority of these markets are structured. And then when you go to the second option, which is a corporatized setup, here a municipality will form an entity. They will have their market as an entity, and then from that entity, then they will be able to have a board of directors that they will run the market together with the CFO, and the municipality will remain 100% shareholder in that setup. So here you would find that the market will have a bit of a freedom, especially when it comes to supply chain processes, unlike in a municipal-owned setup where everything they are strictly governed by the supply chain processes. And as a way, it sometimes causes problems when they have to do certain things in a quicker way. So that is how the first two options operate. And then the third one is the private-public partnership, where a municipality will lead its infrastructure to private sector people. What the municipality will do, they will remain the owner, but they will go out and get somebody to come and run the market on their behalf. And then the person that is running the market will then pay a municipality the rental. So in a way, it frees the municipality from the day-to-day running of the market. So Cape Town is an example of that, where they have leased their operations a long time ago. I think over 10 years ago to private sector player. And then the last option, it is the privately owned and operated market, where everything here belongs to the private sector. And what one can also indicate here is that majority of these private sector markets have emerged maybe within the past 10 years or so, after the private sector people have seen the opportunity to can benefit in the space. It's only George that one can say has been around, and also Nelspruit and Mpumalanga to an extent. But Mudezi, Polokwane, Van der Velde Park are maybe new players. This market they operate. Francois Knowles will also talk more in terms of how they operate. But what is important to remember is that farmers take their produce to the market, and then once the produce is in the market, the agents will sell products on behalf of the farmer. And again, it's also important to note that according to the rules, the produce belongs to the farmer until it's being sold. So the agents will then sell, and then from the proceeds, they will have to make sure that they pay the market 5%, are going to incur this type of the cost when they operate in a national fresh produce market, unlike in a situation where they deal directly with retailers, where there may be a lot of hidden costs that may always come out later. The same with the exports. The returns may be higher, but the cost of operating in that space are quite high. Next slide. Okay. In terms of what we as a department have done, we have decided to partner with the other government departments and as well as the fresh produce industry, with the sole purpose of improving the operations and the service standards of the fresh produce market. We have partnered with the producer bodies, which is your Potato SA, Fruit SA, and DFDC, which is the Deciduous Fruit Development Chamber. They are a community association that represents black deciduous. We are also partnering in the form of IMASA and also CDMA. We are also cooperating with the regulator, APEC, as well as our advisory body, NMC, and our sister department at the COPTA. One may ask why we decided to form this partnership. This was primarily because of the concerns that have been raised by the industry. To say that the services are declining in the national fresh produce market, and there's also a reluctance by some municipalities to reinvest some of the municipal revenue back into the market. One may say on this one that the majority of these municipalities were established some years ago. Some of them over 8 years or so ago, and majority of them have never been subjected to major overhaul in terms of the physical infrastructure. So there's a feeling that some of these municipalities should be reinvesting some of that money in trying to make sure that the markets keep up with the current standard. And as a result of them not investing, you find that the infrastructure has been deteriorating over a period of time. And again, there are issues in terms of non-conformance to food safety and health standards. This is mainly in ensuring that we adhere to hygiene and safety and cleanliness protocols. And then again, there are also challenges in some markets, especially on poor management capacity, where some of the people are just forwarded from the municipalities without the necessary skills to run these markets, and that as a result has caused a problem. And again, there were also some issues in terms of the standard operating procedures. This is mainly to provide guidance in terms of how certain operations in the market should be run. So you find that as a result of this lack of standard operating procedures, there are problems, and this is prevalent in the majority of the market issues with standard operating procedures, because they've developed those for themselves. And again, there are issues around poor information management systems, and also there are issues around the market bylaws, which are outdated, and also there are also issues around poor compliance in terms of the service level agreement. We have been advocating for them to develop service level agreements which in our view will guide how the market should give direction on what is expected of people who are operating there, especially the agents that are currently operating there, and also for the municipality to have the service level agreement with the leadership in terms of what is expected of them. And then there was also what we call Section 7 investigations. These are the investigations that were conducted by our NMC. They did three reports where they detailed some of the challenges that the markets are currently facing. And we have not moved much in terms of ensuring that we address those issues that were raised on those three Section 7 investigation reports. Basically, the Section 7 investigation means that the Minister of Agriculture requested the NMC as an advisor to conduct some investigation on some of the issues that the minister would require assistance or clarity on. And NMC have done that on three occasions, and those reports have been submitted to the department. Next one. Basically, what has happened from our side as a department and the industry, we have developed what is called the code of best practices in terms of guiding the implementation in the market. So what we did, we solicited the input of all the role players, your producers, your agents, and also the regulators, in terms of what they perceive to be the key issues that need to be looked at. And we had an extensive consultation on that. And from those engagements emanated, and from those of regulatory environment, as I've indicated that there were issues with market bylaws and how outdated they are, and also the issues around national legislation in the market is one of the challenges. There was an issue around stakeholder management, consignment controls, issues around safety and security. There were also issues around hygiene and cleanliness, as I've indicated that the standard operating procedures are not there for smaller markets. There were also issues around infrastructure. I've also talked to that earlier. And also in issues around information management, risk management, transformation, and human capital development. This is more in terms of the capacity of the people that are currently there. So those are the 10 issues that were identified by the committee to say that we need to look at those issues to ensure that we assist the market. And then from that, we developed what we call five phase approach, where we decided to make sure that we help the market in terms of reviving their operations. So what we did on the first phase, we conducted what is called a diagnostic phase, where we conducted meetings with market management and also agents, primarily to identify the challenges that are hampering the operations in the market, so that at least when we come up with a solution, we would have properly identified the challenges. And this was done in all the municipal markets. Then from there, we did what we call an implementation phase. This is after we have understood the diagnosis in terms of the problems. So here again, we engaged with market management and agents in terms of making sure that we work with them in terms of implementing the recommendations of those diagnostic reports over a period of time. Because what we did on the diagnostic phase, we identified what one would say are immediate problems and what we think can be dealt with in the medium term and what can be dealt with issues that were identified in the short term where cleanliness, issues around stakeholder management to say how do you deal with your stakeholders. Those are the issues that we felt that usually can be dealt with in a short space of time. And there were also issues that we felt that can be dealt with over a medium term. Those were mainly around consignment controls. That is to make sure that we properly record everything that comes to the market so that the municipality and the farmers don't get robbed what is due to them. So we the same with the human capital development. We felt that those are the things that we can deal with over a medium term. And there are other issues like infrastructure where now you have to involve the municipalities, and we felt that those can be dealt with over a long period of time. Next slide. I've lost the presentation on the screen.
Can the secretariat assist to share the presentation? It seems to have gone. There we go. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. We can move to the next slide. Yeah, and then the third phase primarily involved the facilitation primarily in terms of the implementation of the code. When we've given them things to do in terms of the implementation, we will make sure that we visit the market just to make sure that they implement those issues that we have worked with them in identifying. Those that are in the short term, we work with them and make sure that they do that. And then again, we will make sure that we visit those markets unannounced, because sometimes it's better to get a clear sense of what the market is doing when you go there unannounced. We just pitch there in the morning, very early in the morning, because the operations of the market, they start very early, from around 4 or 5 in the morning up until 11. So we'll make sure that by at least 5 we are there in the morning, testing is done, whether people do what is expected, we'll be able to ascertain if whether they are doing what is expected of them, and also to check issues around cleanliness, if the market management and the agents are cleaning and all that. So we'll do that. And then from there, we'll have a discussion with them in the form of a report where we will note what we have found and what is it that we think they need to improve. And at the same time, we have used the services of Swani and Joburg market, because they are the leading market and they have got expertise, especially in terms of providing recommendations and solutions on some of the the issues that are currently there. And then the fourth phase that we looked at was mainly ensuring that we check the scorecard, because what normally happens is that during the initial phase, we will also record all those issues that are currently there, just to check if markets are doing what is expected of them, and then we'll score them according to performance. And then from there, when we share the reports, we'll also share with them in terms of the scoring, to say that in as far as risk is concerned, we are not doing well. When it comes to information management, you are not doing well. If on security, you are improving. Maybe on cleanliness, you are doing well, and then and so on and so forth. So all the markets that we have dealt with, we have ensure that we share with them the scorecard. And then on the last page, it will be the municipal engagement, where in an event where we see that there isn't much improvement and the market is deteriorating, we then begin with the process of engaging the municipality as the owner of that facility to say that this is what we are observing, and then these are the recommendations in terms of what is that we think you can do in the report. That's what we have done. But one can say today that there are markets that have taken the reports to heart and they have implemented. One can mention markets like in the Eastern Caribbean that really took this to heart and they have improved immensely as a result. And there are those that like UK that are really trying, and then there are those that are moving in the opposite direction, like your wheat bank in Machame and Machame and so on. But all the information is there on the report in terms of our experiences and in as far as the implementation of the recommendation is concerned. Next slide. So that was the intervention that we came up with in terms of the code of best practice and implementation. As I have said earlier, that we have tried to collaborate with the municipalities, and one can report that as I said earlier, that we've got the municipalities like Buffalo City that have really done very well in terms of taking the recommendation. What they did, amongst others, was to ensure that they invest heavily into their markets. You know, they make sure that they put budget aside to say that for this year we are going to look at the infrastructure refurbishment program. We are going to make sure that we fix our bridges. We are going to fix our ripening facilities. We are also going to improve the gates, the security, and also ensure that the IT equipment is up to scratch, so that when the products come, the gate is properly recorded, and then one can be able to produce a proper record. As I'm saying, that Buffalo City is one of those that have done very well, and there are at the same time those that have not done well, as I've mentioned, Machaving and Midbank and Solplight. And I think it may be because of other challenges that those markets are faced with. And as a result of those challenges, the market will normally take a backseat, because municipality will get to a point where they would want to prioritize in terms of what they consider to be important. And in an event where the municipality has got a lot of issues, you see that the market also suffers. That has been our experience today. And to assist with the mentorship program, again, Joburg and Fani have played a critical role there in terms of assisting us. They have to date assisted Solplight. Joburg was assigned to assist Solplight in Kimberley, and Pretoria was assigned to assist Buffalo City, and that's why they have improved so much. And they were also assigned to assist Pietermaritzburg market, and they also benefited from that intervention. Unfortunately, the intervention did not result in positive results in Citibank, primarily because of the challenges that the municipality is experiencing there. So it became a situation like with other markets where now they were not able to implement some of those recommendations. And again, we have also recorded some of the complaints in terms of ethical trading. We have talked about this last week, where we were informed about some of the unscrupulous tendencies that were happening in the market. That is mainly around produce reservation, where people will preserve produce for certain people, and then others will not be given an opportunity to buy. Issues around date sales were also recorded. So all those issues are competition related issues. And we have forwarded all the issues to the Competition Commission to investigate, and we are still waiting for their report in terms of their findings, and we are hopeful that from that they can give us recommendations in terms of how to nip in the bud some of those tendencies. And again, as DAF, we have tried our level best to promote this fresh produce market as one of the nodes within the value chain that people should consider. We have gone to industry forums and symposiums and all that, where we will go as project leaders to try to collaborate with our the work still needs to happen on that in terms of collaboration with the COPTA, primarily because of all the challenges that we have experienced. The committee recommended that we should consider having what one calls a National Fresh Produce Development Agency. The reason being that you would see that all the interventions that we have done to date were primarily through lobbying and cohesion and all that. So there's nothing in the rule book that says the municipality has to take the recommendations serious. If they choose not to take the recommendations, there's nothing that we can do. So we then decided to come up with a concept where we would want to standardize all the markets and make sure that they fall under one national code. But the challenge currently is that the Office of the State Law Advisor has indicated that what we wanted to do will not pass a constitutional test, primarily because as it stands now, they are acts like your municipal systems and structures acts that are currently there to run the markets from a municipal level, and also constitutionally, all these issues are under the local government here. So what it means is that our job as National Department of Agriculture is mainly to worry about regulation in line with the Agricultural Product Standards Act, as well as the APA, Agricultural Produce Agents Act. So we are currently trying to engage our colleagues at COPTA to try and see what is it that can be done to make sure that we deal with this matter so that there is uniformity.
Can we conclude?
Sorry?
Can we conclude?
Oh, yes. In terms of the conclusion, we can pass the issues around challenges, because I think we have talked about them a little bit. We can quickly move to the recommendation and way forward. Primarily, what we are saying is we have developed the scorecard. We will track the markets in implementing the issues, and we'll also make sure that we use the mentorship and the coaching program that we have to mentor the market. And then also we are also exploring the possibility of gazetting this code of best practice as official norms and standards for the fresh produce industry. And again, we are also proposing that the Department of Labor be and health be engaged so that we can deal with the issues that are related to food safety standards as well as occupational health issues. The next slide, which will be the last one. Yes. Again, we are also calling for the SAUFM, which is an organization of market managers, to play a critical role in terms of assisting us, because currently they are not working that well. And then, again, I've talked to the issues around the establishment of a national fresh produce marketing body. Because the industry players feel that is something that we as the department need to consider. This is the end, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. Honorable members, we'll now open the session for questions of clarity on the presentation that has been put before us. We'll start with Honorable Kappe.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the members and everybody who's attending this meeting and the executive. Chair, I think this is a very valuable presentation, and we want to applaud the department to having considered our request and bringing this before the committee. It's information like this that helps us to map way forward and take our muscles along with us as and when we talk issues of transformation. I just want to check, get into the presentation. On, I think it's slide 4, there's a market operate. Last market agents charge a commission of about, a fee of about 5 to 7%. Municipalities also charge a fee of 5%. On turnover, farmers in care at the end, 12.5%. Is it not double charging the farmer? Now you have market agents charging, the municipality charging. And this, the presentation says to us, other markets are owned by municipalities. Now through your local economic development, you suppose as municipalities might tell you that they're supposed to support your farmers. Now if you are double charged on this, what is the department saying about this, as and when they are going to reform or intervene? What is the perspective of farmers on this charge? What are they saying about it? Are there no complaints on it? And then we go into the key interventions. It is phased up to phase 5. There's no time frame. So when are you intending to start this project of intervening according to those phases? I'm looking at phase 1, that is diagnostic almost, and this is on slide 8. Project Rebirth on slide 8 has identified all those challenges that are there. Now you know what are the challenges, but you still have in phase 1 that you need to have a phase that you sit and identify and diagnose and everything. But my question here overall is that when are you intending to do this? I saw Chair, for sure, also on slide 13, the presenter is still talking about DAF. I think that should be corrected. The department has changed on that. My question is on slide 14, which ends by having exhausted all platforms to improve markets. There's a need by industry stakeholders to engage and sensitize the Minister of Department on the importance of establishing National Fresh Produce Market Council. Why is it the the industry stakeholders that must sensitize the minister? Or does it mean minister doesn't see the importance here of this national fresh produce market? That will be my question, sir, and thank you very much. Oh, I wanted to check on the last one, check. Are the farmers involved in this? Because even on the interventions, you see all these things that it comes and those industry stakeholders.
Thank you, Honorable Chape. Honorable Mashazi. Honorable Mashazi. Honorable State.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation, Chair. I believe it's long overdue that we look at fresh produce markets in South Africa. Chairperson, unfortunately, I missed last week, so I'm not sure if it maybe was covered, but I just want to find out two things. What is the current oversight role of the department, the national department? Has they done oversight? Is it described somewhere? I looked at the structures of the municipal, private, and so forth. So currently, what is the role of the department in the fresh produce market, if there is a role at all? I see there is an agricultural produce committee. What is the current staffing and the function of that, if I can just describe that? And then, Chairperson, I would like to find out from looking at that four options from municipal Cape Town that is owned by the municipality but is under private use. If anyone can maybe explain to us if they could see which ones of these options are actually working best, because it's one of those issues again that I don't think must be a municipal function. I think it must be some kind of a private-public structure or a shared ownership, and especially by farmers to have some kind of input in that. If we can have maybe some kind of a breakdown of what do we see as working best in these markets. And then the private markets, I know the one in Lukesi, and can we get more explanation about that? How does it function? How does it work? Is that not maybe also something that we need to look at, especially in more rural areas, Jay, that we can start with more private towns or many towns these days, but also mostly fresh produce markets. Would that be covered under this new proposal? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. Ndate Matias, the Honorable Matias.
I've just one question, but I'll split it into one. Slide 10 recommend that there should be a bill that should be developed. Now, what follows that is what under which legislation or act does fresh produce market operate? Does it operate under agricultural produce agents? Legislation, and if not, to date, let me rephrase it this way, Honorable Chair. Is the industry self-regulating? If the answer to my question, the first question, is there is no legislation under which fresh produce markets operate is the industry self-regulating. Thanks, Mr. President.
Thank you, Honorable Ntate Matiasa. The Honorable Kapa.
Let me first, Chair, join and appreciate the presentation, which is quite informative. I'm also very happy to get the presentation, which is, it gives information that is assisting us. And on top of appreciating, Chair, your opening remarks and the interesting history part of our society. Now, just a few. One is that to get a clarity on, because they have talked about the assistance. Now, where there are farmers who transport their products to the market, and there are hawkers who transport their products, or reduction of costs that assist those two categories on the in this process of marketing. And another one of my interest is now what would happen to products which have not been processed or marketed or sold from the market, or is there any problem that there comes up with the products that end up being perished on the market because they've not been marketed for the unfortunate reasons of maybe natural situation. And lastly, Chair, I would like to highlight this to the department. And I think the DG, acting DG and me, interested in this one. I'm concerned that the department is not efficiently elevating their contribution in this fighting of unemployment, poverty, and inequality. And I'm definitely sure that all these things that are happening there, they do address these actions, these elements, but they are not sufficiently elevated and be made, because no one else will do that for them. At the end of the day, it's as if they do nothing to address these. Maybe they should devise some method of having this every time being elevated, because it does address these issues. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable James Baukapa. Memasho, the Honorable Memasho.
Thank you very much. Honorable Chair, I just wanted to check on slide, sorry for my I lost my what you call, where we are talking about, Chair, can I just be given a small, I lost my what you call, cooperation. It's a slide, I don't know what, yeah, slide 8. Let me go to slide 8 where they talk about, the presenter talked about the government fresh produce industry improved the revive of the operations and service standards of the NFPMS across the country. That is the question. My question will be on that slide. The operations of those institutions. One will ask a question to say, in reviving, how do they do it? Are they going to be looking into the policy and procedures of those small entities, small farmers, for them to qualify in the market? Because in the market, normally what is happening, what we realize is that they will talk about the SAPS, the quality management system of the products that comes from the farmer. So I just wanted to check, as they are going to be reviving that, are they taking into consideration to look into the policies, the operational policies of each and every smallholder. Farmers, are they helping them to get those things or those operations or policy or those policies that are allowing them to be in operations? Are they going to be helping them on that? Which I think, if I can be advised on that, I would be happy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Martha, are you done?
Yes, I'm just asking if I was audible, because it's like my network is not doing well.
Yes, you are audible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Memasho Aparepriet, who handed.
Thanks, Alf Wester.
Good, good.
Voorzitter, baie dankie. I also want to thank the department for this presentation. I think it has given us a clearer view of our fresh produce market, and I think my colleagues have covered me to quite an extent. But I just have three specific things that I want to ask Chairperson. In terms of the rebirth and the reviving of the fresh produce market, and I think Honourable Slape mentioned it, what is the time frame and how have we prioritised? I know we're handling them in phases and we've evaluated them, but maybe can we get a list of how we have prioritised these fresh produce markets in terms of which one is the most important, which one we need to tackle head first, and then as the list goes on. I hope that is clear. Then in terms of the cost breakdown per market, how are we going to be funding this research or this? Would the department service for that? Who is then responsible for the cost of improving this? Mr. Sanford also mentioned certain markets are assigned to assist other markets. And I would just like more clarity regarding that. What does that mean? Did we sign MOUs or SLAs or commitments with those markets that are functioning, that are set to assist these others that are not functioning, for example, the Emalahleni and the Machabeng ones? And how are they assisting? Is it financially? Is it in terms of institutional knowledge? What is the details in terms of that? Chairperson, and I think that is all my questions. I have been covered by my colleagues.
Baie dankie, Akhbare Breed. Honorable Ndabezitha, Nkosi Enkulu, the Honorable Cebekhu.
Ngikhuleke Sihlalo, ngikhuleke Thembu Mkhulu. Members of the Portfolio Committee. I think a lot has been taken by the colleagues, Chairperson, but maybe I would sound as though I'm repeating what has been asked. But my question, Chairperson, is with regards to the payments. Are these smallholder and subsistence farmers paid upfront as they deliver their produce, or maybe they get paid in at the end of the month? And secondly, if then they are paid at the end of the month, does the rule of paying service providers in 30 days time observed by those who are responsible for absorbing those produce? Thirdly, Chairperson, one has an understanding, a legal understanding of what is happening in this district fair produce market. In some areas, I must say, in some areas, Chair, you find that these producers, or these farmers, I would say, they sell to certain individuals in bulk. Those individuals that buy and then take the produce to the produce market as though it's theirs, whereas they don't activate from the sale. has more what I'll call poaching in this field, the fresh produce markets. Let me end there, Chess. Thank you.
The Honorable Trader. Mamu Trader. Pengeba. The Honorable Mbabama.
Inkosi Masdiba, you will forgive me for not putting on my video. I'd like to thank Ntate Mantata for a very good presentation. However, I do have a few questions. The first one being, it's around the hawkers. I think he said that 60% of the people that buy from fresh produce markets are hawkers. And he highlights the importance of the hawkers in this regard. Can the department provide more details or statistics in terms of the business done by the hawkers, including the commodities that are bought by the hawkers? And still on hawkers, I would like to understand whether it seems that they are in competition, they are competing with large buyers. And I would just like to know if there is any discounts of any nature that are inbuilt for those hawkers, because I think that would be some sort of support maybe to small-scale entrepreneurs. So I would just like to know if the department has thought about discounts for hawkers. And also I understand that the emerging small or small-scale farmers compete with the commercial farmers in terms of bringing their produce to the market. And I'd like to find out if there are any discounts there in terms of commission, because I've seen that the commission can range from anything from 5% to 7.5%. Is the same commission charged of commercial established farmers as the emerging small-scale farmers as well? And then there are just two things that I missed, Shay, on slide 8. I missed what Ntate Mantata said Section 7 investigations are. If he doesn't mind repeating that for me, I can't remember what slide number it is, but I'll talk about quickly, if he doesn't mind, repeat this mentorship program. Who is it geared at? Who is it targeting?
Sabulela Mphankoma, the Honorable Muntwedi, Tate Muntwedi, the Honorable members, is there any other honorable member that I have not recognized? Member Sasi?
You haven't recognized me, Chair.
Go ahead, Ntate Masipa.
Yalewoha, Ntate Madiba. Ntate Madiba, kilewale opening ya rao marakere. Kinalewa hoshi kamo presentation ya rena le hoshi mantata. Then I was trying to make you deal more presentation around. And the man had a Hoshi Mantata Realewa presentation Alena. I think the big problem maybe one is that we've got municipality problems that we need to address. Because the fresh produce, basically they run mostly from municipalities. And I think the question for me is that how would you like maybe this committee to assist you to stop this kind of if you want to call it the collapse of this fresh produce
I mean, we know about the Pretoria market that had huge problems. I don't know what the situation is. Can you also just brief us what the situation is of the Pretoria market? I think the big thing is that fresh produce are dependent, obviously, primarily service delivery, electricity, you know, functioning municipalities and all those kind of stuff. So what I would like to see, Chair, maybe is that Minister of our Minister, as well as Minister of COCTA, jointly looking at these problems and really addressing them. Because if we do not address them, Chair, we are going to affect the rate at which we transform this particular sector. That's number one. And number two, obviously, the call it the bigger plant, you know, the obviously, you know, making the barrier to entry, you know, even much bigger. But otherwise, Hoshi Mantata, Lewo. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntate Masipa. You are privileged to be able to see Hoshi Mantata on the platform. I simply have just names here of participants and cannot distinguish who's who, but let us acknowledge the presence of our traditional leaders who we hold to high esteem. Honorable members, any other honorable member, Mema Shasi? Honorable Mema Shasi?
I have sent you a message on Honorable Mashati. She's just checking in now.
Oh, okay. Thank you. As I see her on the platform, but I'm not sure she's able to hear us. I will afford an opportunity later when she's audible. Honorable members, any other honorable member who have missed out would like to pose a question? If not, I'll perhaps sponsor two questions, honorable members, and then we go for responses from the presenters, the officials of the department. If I may ascertain from the department, can they indicate whether there is a linkage between the volumes of agricultural produce and the existence of operational fresh produce markets? For example, honorable members, can they indicate which provinces produce the largest volumes of fresh produce and whether there are operational fresh produce markets in those provinces? The second question is also linked to the previous question. Honorable members, I'd like to ascertain if the department mentioned that for the Agricultural Produce Agents Amendment Bill, public hearings were only held in four provinces, namely Gauteng Province, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. And this was based on the presentation. The department, therefore, can it indicate whether the country's fresh produce mostly comes from the four provinces and further furnish the committee with actual volumes that are produced in all provinces for different commodities? Thank you. Honorable Ntate Ramasodi, we'll hand back to yourself and the officials of the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I would split the questions that were asked, I think, amongst the four officials that we have on the platform, being Ntate Mantata, Ntate Nakana, Medingile, and lastly, in terms of other operations within the fresh produce markets, we have got a member of APEC who would also lean in terms of the questions. I'll be ticking them off. If they are those that are remaining, I will respond to those chairperson. In the order, Ndate Mantata, Nakana, Medingile, then taking Mr. North. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member, for the questions that were posed to us. I will try and answer but some of the questions, and colleagues will come in as the acting DG has indicated. Starting with, I think it's a matter regarding the charging, which amounts to about 12.5 for farmers to operate in the market. Basically, what is happening there is that the what you call the fresh produce market and the agents are providing a service. And as a result of that, they need to be paid. That is why they rely on those fees. You see that when a farmer comes to deliver their produce, the produce has to be offloaded. It has to be put in a cold room. It has to remain there. And later it has to move to a platform where it's been sold. There are costs in terms of electricity, the staff that works for the municipality and all that. So all those costs are incurred by both the municipality and the agency. So ultimately they have to be compensated for the cost that they have incurred. And you see that even from the agency themselves, they are also responsible for selling the produce on behalf of the farmer. And as a result of that, they are entitled to that service and to that payment. So ultimately, as we have said, it amounts to 12%. So it's something that it has to be there because there's a service that goes with that percentage. So that is why we are saying that this 12% has to be paid. And then on the question around the phase five, in terms of when are we going to implement? I think currently the challenge there is that as I've indicated that we as a department have been in a way punching maybe above our weight in terms of the responsibilities, because currently as the legislation stands, our job is mainly to deal with the operation, I mean not the operation but the trading, regulate the trading on the market floor. But you'll see that majority of the things that we have done today have more to do with the operations. Hence now it becomes difficult to put a timeline on when will some of these implementation measures will commence. Primarily because we are not in charge. For example, if we are talking about a need to put in, let's say for a market like a PE, where we have identified that there are serious challenges in terms of management, it becomes something that is not our control. If we prioritize that, it becomes a challenge. For instance, they haven't had a manager there in that market since 2008. And as a department, there's not much we can do if the municipality does not prioritize the hiring
of a manager who should be in charge of the operations of the market. So it becomes difficult for us to put time frames on some of the things that we can do in terms of the implementation. So that is why we are saying that sometimes it becomes necessary to try and move towards the point where we standardize this market, so that when it comes to these issues, we know that there are certain issues that they have to be done, irrespective of who's in charge in that municipality. Because currently, as it stands, we rely on who's in charge and their understanding of the importance of the local economic development. So it becomes a bit of a difficult path. And then again, in terms of sensitizing the minister, I think what is meant is that with all the issues that are currently there, it becomes necessary to update the minister regularly in terms of what is currently happening and the challenges. And the minister is quite aware of some of the issues. Hence, you would see that even in the past, the Section 7, which I'll talk to later, were established because of that information that the minister had, that we need to investigate some of the issues that are currently happening. And then when it comes to the role of the farmers in the committee, the project event, or in the market, we currently rely on the commodity bodies. Hence, we indicated that we currently work very closely with Potato SA, Fruit SA, and also CPMA, which represents the deciduous, black deciduous fruit producer. So that is where we get more information in terms of where the farmers stand, what is it that they want to happen in the market. Hence, even when we were completing the code of best practice, these organizations, they could bring a perspective of a producer to say, from a producer point of view, these are the things that moving forward. And then moving to Honorable Dave, there was a question around the staffing at the APEC. I'll leave that to Mr. Knowles to deal with that. And then on the issue around the ownership and management models that we have presented, the question was more around which one works best. I think there are pros and cons on each and every model. There's no model that one can say works better than the other one. It's more on the application of the model. But our view would be that it becomes difficult to prescribe one model on the rest of the municipalities. Because what normally happens is if you were to look at where you have departmental options right now, for things to move quicker, currently, it depends on the relationship that that market has with the counterpart in the municipality. If the relations are not that good, then it becomes a problem, especially in an event where things need to be procured. If a fridge gets broken or cold room gets broken, in a normal business setup, one will have to fix that immediately. But in a departmental option, then it means one has to go and talk to the people in the municipality. They have to source three quotations. They have to subject that to bids and all that. And then you find that at the same time moves. So, but our view is that you still need something within a corporatized setup where the municipalities get some bit of an operational freedom so that they can do certain things without being bogged down by the municipal processes.
So it becomes a bit tricky to say which model works better. Again, on the issue of triple P, it depends on the municipality itself in terms of how the municipality defines its role when it comes to local economic development. There are municipalities that will do that without getting involved in the market because we simply don't have the capacity nor the skills to deal with the day-to-day running of the market. We'll be happy to get money from them, and then we use that money for development purposes. But there will be other municipalities that will say, we can't move in that direction because we want to set the agenda in terms of making sure that our smallholder farmers are in a position to can benefit directly from the infrastructure that belongs to us. And then on the issue around Mwege, the market was primarily established by a combination, I think, of farmers, the two and an agency, where they formed an operation company that runs that market on their behalf. It is a good system, but the problem currently would be that in an event where you've got one farmer in charge and one agency, issues around market access becomes a challenge because that farmer who owns that market would want a situation where their produce gets preference more than others. And then in an event where you've got one, agent, again, issues around competition to say that for this system to be vibrant, you still need that level of competition within this fresh produce agency. So if it's just one agency, then it becomes a problem because they operate on their own with their own rules and that sometimes can be to a detriment of the farmers. So it would be nicer if you have a model like that, but having more agencies operating in that space. And then before I move to Honorable Matthias, I think there was a question again from Honorable Stein regarding the oversight role of Department of Agriculture. I think as we have explained on the presentation that currently our role is mainly in ensuring that AP are being is done through APEC and also agricultural produce standards act, where now we have to make sure that the fruits and vegetables that are sold in the market they meet the requirements in terms of safety and all the regulations in as far as the requirements are concerned. So we are not necessarily responsible for the day-to-day operations of the market. Currently, in the current setup, it's the municipality that is responsible for that. So our role in the current format is more on ensuring that those acts are being implemented. And then on the questions around Honorable Matthias, in terms of the fresh produce market, to say where does the fresh produce market operate legislatively? Are they the industry self-regulating? No, they are not self-regulating. They are governed by our acts as I've indicated at the national level in terms of the trading aspect. They are also
what you call rules within the bylaws within the municipality that are being used to regulate how these markets should operate, issues like how they should deal with what you call consignment control, their hygiene issues and all that. So all those things are within the bylaws. So it's in the municipal space. There's also the municipal laws in terms act in terms of municipal system and structures act, which are also being used. And there's also MFMA, which is currently being used. So they are not self regulating. And then from Honorable Kappa, in terms of transport assistance to farmers and hawkers, again we do not offer that as a department. As I've already indicated, our role as a regulator. But I know that some of the services for the municipalities, like your Joburg market, sometimes they do that, but it's their own initiative. It's not something that we are involved with. And then on the issue around the unsold product, I think Francois can talk to that through APEC rules. And then the next question, I think from Honorable Matho, was on the revival of operations, to say what does that revival in a way entail. For us, that revival is more to do with ensuring that we move more towards the standardization of these markets. You know, when we talk about issues that, in our view, have not received much attention, especially around infrastructure, issues around how you conduct proper cleaning operations and other operational aspects of the market. Basically, that's what we are targeting to say. When we revive the market, we need to look at those all those issues as prescribed by the Code of Best Practice, and uniformity is required in ensuring that we prioritize all those issues. It's not left to somebody within the municipality based on their understanding. So we have to make sure that we check up our interventions in as far as legislation and consent. And then I think the next one was on Honorable Priet in terms of the time frame, to say that do we have a time frame in terms of the operations and what is important to us to do in the short, medium and long term. I think based on what we have done, we believe that if we can be able to deal with the all the legislative challenges that are currently there, it will help us to be in a position to better prioritize, to say these are the issues that we need to deal with here, that currently the problems to infrastructure, and we as a department are not in a position to can say in the next year or in the next 2 years this is what we are going to do in as far as infrastructure is concerned. So that function still lies with the municipality. Hence, I've been emphasizing the issue around the legislation to say maybe that's the direction that we need to go into to make sure that we sort out and that. And then and then on Mr. Prevekulu, payments to Honorable Prevekulu, payments to farmers farmers are normally paid after their produce has been sold. They are not paid up front, they are paid after. I think in the last session we did explain the whole issue around the trust, where we indicated that there's a trust that is formed by the agency, and on that trust they make sure that they put in the money, and that money is for the sole purpose of paying both the market and the farmer. And in most cases they pay in a very short space of time. Francois can also talk to that in terms of the specific time frame, but usually they pay within a day or two of selling. And then on the buying and the selling by people who are not necessarily farmers, it's one of those issues that we have also sent to the Competition Commission to investigate, because it's one of the burning issues in Durban market, where you have people who buy on the market floor, and then after buying on the market floor, they are given the space just outside the main hall, where they put their things there, and then they, in a way, people who are coming from outside are forced to buy from them, not on the market floor, and that in itself increases the price, you know. So we felt that it's a competition issue, and the Competition Commission will be well suited to address a matter of that nature. And then on the hawkers, again we can also try honourable choice from the market themselves in terms of how they do these things in terms of the number of hawkers that deal with them and the type of discounts that they offer. But the little that I know is that usually issues around the discounts is something that will normally be negotiated by the agency and the hawkers themselves. They may not be a standard way of doing it, because it's normally in that setup of demand and supply. And then on the issue of the Section 7 investigations, how these investigations work is that the industry would approach the minister, and the first one that the investigation that was done, I think around 1999, when I think our current minister was still there, during the time of land agriculture and land affairs, they approached the NMC. I mean, they approached the minister, and the minister requested the NMC to investigate all these issues that they were talking about, especially on the operations and the sustainability of markets. And NMC, as we have explained in the previous session, and also the minister, I think, went as many to indicate the type of role that the NMC does in advising the minister. So they did that. They conducted their own investigations on three occasions. The reports are available. We can also share with them with the department, with the committee, in terms of what they have found. But basically what they have found is more or less what we are currently dealing with. Issues around legislation, issues around infrastructure, instability at market level, the role of municipality, and all that. So that information is readily available. And then in terms of mentorship, how it works is that we have decided, or we felt at the time when we were conducting our own investigation, that there were serious challenges in terms of the market, where Paris indicated that the majority of them did not consider in terms of saying when a project enter your market at the gate, what are the things that you need to do to make sure that you record things properly. When it comes to cleaning, what are the things that you need to do? So what we did...
Then we conclude.
Okay. Just the last point, Che. I was just saying that what normally happens there is that we identified the big markets like Yotswane and Joburg to say that because you have experience in terms of running the markets from operations point of view, how can you assist the smaller markets because they do not have the capacity? And they designed programs that we have followed in ensuring that the smaller markets follow. As I've said, that when it comes to issues around how you deal with products as they come in, how you clean your markets, how you update your bylaws and all that, and then that's what we have done. I think I'll talk to you and let other colleagues come in. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Ramasodi, can we wrap up this session?
Yes, Chair. If you just allow maybe that the knows just to deal with the issues around the markets, and then he can be allowed through you, Chair, to go through the presentation on APAC, which would tailor in with the questions that have been asked by honourable members. Thank you.
Agents Act. That's an act that was published for the first time in 1993. Our primary mandate is to regulate three pillars in the industry, that being fresh produce agents and predominantly fresh produce markets, export agents and livestock agents. Within the framework of our legislation, I always refer to us as a creature of statute. That means simply that we function within a well-defined structure, and I cannot operate outside the mandate given to us by the Department of Agriculture. So Donard is the custodian of the legislation. Within APAC, we have council members representing people responsible for oversight. We are self-funding. This comes from Section 10 of the Act. We are based in Augsburg, from where we serve the whole of South Africa, and call me and my team the watchdog of the industry, if you like. Next slide, please. Thank you. So within our mandate, there's one important question that we must ask, why do we exist? And that is simply to, with responsibility, protect the farmer. And that is our primary focus. Albeit that we do many other things, the interest of the farmer is probably the most important. Our objects are defined in Section 9 of our Act, and that is to regulate the occupations of the three industries that I referred to earlier, that being fresh produce export and livestock agents. And it's important to note that it's only agents, and an agent is defined as somebody that represents a farmer. There's, the definition is more comprehensive, but we can talk about that later. We are also required to maintain and enhance the status and the dignity of the people that we regulate. So we have to look after them and enhance them, and also, with great responsibility, protect the interests of the agents that we regulate. Next slide, please. First and foremost, I think it's really important to understand how we are constituted. The minister will appoint members for a period of 3 years. Council members may then serve for 2 consecutive terms. That means 6 years consecutively, after which they will then be replaced by new members. Representation is embedded in our legislation, and it includes the following. There must be 2 farmers of fresh produce, 2 farmers representing livestock. We've got 3 fresh produce agent representatives, 3 agents from livestock, 3 agents from export, 2 people designated by the minister, that's for internal oversight, and then 2 people who represent consumers. We've got 1 person from Dollard who sits on the council and is also the contact person between APAC and the department. From the above, a chairperson is chosen by the minister, which is, and then a second term if so required. The APAC legislative framework is also referred to as the ethical framework from which we do the work. I would like to point out the following pieces of legislation that serves as a mandate for me and my team to operate. The first being the APA Act, that is Act 12 of 1992. This Act was amended in 2003, and that piece of legislation is called Act 47 of 2003. For us to give effect to the objectives of the Act, we need to have rules. These rules are drafted and signed off by the department and the minister, and as such we have 3 sets of rules. We've got 1 for fresh produce agents. This was published in 2005. We have submitted a new set of rules for fresh produce agents in conjunction with Dollard. This is in process. we have livestock agents rules. This was published on 2 March 2018 and was recently implemented, as with export agents, which was also published and implemented last year. Then during COVID, we published COVID-19 directions. This was done on the 31st of July 2020, the purpose being to allow for gatherings at auctions. We had great uncertainty as to what is required, and APAC, in conjunction with Dollard, published these directions, and this served the industry so that we could continue within the vision of government. In November 2019, there was an outbreak of foot and mouth disease in Limpopo. As such, auctions were closed, and APAC took up the task to publish biosecurity rules, which was done and developed in conjunction with the industry. These rules were published on 30 November 2020 last year, and we are busy rolling them out, looking after animal safety. Currently, the APA Bill 2020 is in process, and I think that is part of the process here today. Can I have the next slide, please? Thank you. In terms of rules, the three sets of rules that we have the following. There's a code of conduct for agents. In other words, must operate. But every agent or every employee that works for an agency owes a fiduciary duty to its principal, the principal being the farmer. Fiduciary has two legs, the one being trust and the other one being financial trust. The question is, how is this done? Agents are required to operate honestly and in good faith. They must be properly skilled. They have to deal with their farmers with good care and diligence. They must have the necessary knowledge, skill, and expertise, and they must only act in the best interest of the principal, that being the farmer. And the code of conduct, in my opinion, is the most important element in the rules. They must also avoid a conflict of interest at all costs. In other words, they cannot willingly compete with a farmer with their own produce. It's not allowed, and we will take them to task if that happens. In terms of the rules, there's also very specific focus on the operational matters and how they must function and what is required in terms of payment, communication, etc. The current protection of farmers, and again, please, I'm referring this to the ethical framework or the legislative framework. For fresh produce agents, there's a trust account required for each agent. This is specified in Section 19 of the Act. APAC also manages a fidelity fund for losses due to theft and fraud. So if we find any agent guilty of either theft or fraud, he or she will be subjected to a disciplinary process. This is also defined in the Act. And we will then guarantee farmers upon a guilty conviction that they will not lose 1 cent of money owed to them or money that is due by an agent. The powers of the disciplinary tribunal is important because it's an independent tribunal. We will appoint such a tribunal, but it's independent and it must take an independent decision on the way forward. Currently for livestock and export agents, and I think that has been amended in the 2020 bill, we can only take livestock and export agents to court via court applications. There's not a focus on a disciplinary tribunal or trust accounts, a fidelity fund at this point in time. The strategic objective of APAC is in January 2019, for the next 3 years. This must be revisited by the end of this year for the next 3 year period. The current strategic objectives are the following. We must continue with our regulatory activities. These are the day-to-day activities, normal operations, in other words. we must consider aspects that are required in the Act that can be amended by the rules. We are fortunate that the Act is now under scrutiny, and I think it will, to a large extent, address this strategic objective. We also have a focus on representation at FPEF, that is the Exporters Forum, and we have managed this well, and we work with them, albeit that the Exporters Forum is a voluntary organization. Number four is APAC must ensure a level playing field. This talks to transformation, access to farmers, access to markets, etc. And then lastly, we must expand and grow the APAC plan. So we need to market ourselves specifically amongst the farmers and I think consumers, that they know who we are, what we can do, what we offer. The next slide, please. I would like to just focus on the operational work that we do. Of course, we have a regulatory focus, so we need to make sure that within our framework, we have agents that are all registered. We collect annual fees, fidelity fund contributions, and guarantees. And just remember, we are self-funding. We also do on a monthly basis, and this is for fresh produce agents, trust reconciliations and audit reports. So for us, it's important to follow the money, to follow the paper trail, to make sure that agents are all above board and that they are following the rules as laid down by the APA Act and the department. We must, in addition, position APAC to effectively contribute to the development and transformation of the agency system of trading of agricultural products, that is all products. So we play a great role to make sure that we are represented on various forums, like the Agri-BEE Council. I don't sit on that council myself, but we have some of our council members who represent APAC there. We do a lot more in terms of transformations, but in terms of training is really important. Online learning portal for our agents. It's available anywhere in South Africa 24/7, 365 days a year. In addition, we did 18 training sessions with Dalark to 942 small commercial farmers across South Africa in the last financial year. And this is really important because this allows us the platform to communicate with small commercial farmers in terms of how they are protected, how they should market their produce, and that they are not being done in. It's a really important aspect that we focus on. Then I think we've said a lot about Project Rebirth. We play an important role to assist the department there as well. In our last financial year, and it's important if I can answer one question that came from the previous session, how do we report? We report to the minister once a year, and this is done through Dalart and the office of Minister Ramaswamy. We report by writing an annual report. This report is available on our website, and I'll provide the website address at the end of my presentation. So what we did in the last financial year, issues that I reported back on, is that we grew the Fidelity Fund from 23 million rand in 2007 to 38.3 million in 2020. We actively work on recouping legal fees, and in the last 5 years we recouped 2.8 million rand. We saved almost a million rand on free marketing exposure, talking to farmers, visiting farms, being part of farmers' days, and actively promoting the APAC brand to all important and relevant role players. We've had 28 years of an unqualified audit. We currently regulate 910 fresh produce agents. That's the number in the country. And we effectively regulated a fresh produce industry in excess of 18.2 billion rand per year. But here's a disclaimer that I would like to add to this statement. We must be very careful that we promote the big figure in a country where we don't feed everybody properly every day. So I'm very wary to say that we're doing exceptionally well if people go to bed very hungry, and that's our country that we must never forget. This is, I'm going to conclude with this slide. During the last financial year, we introduced a guide for registered auditors. It's called Assurance Engagements on the Fresh Produce Agents Trust Accounts. This is this was supported by a body called IRBA, which is the Independent Regulatory Body for Auditors. This means simply that we have the blessing to do a proper oversight on trust accounts of fresh produce agents. This is very important. I alluded to the fact that we follow the money earlier, and this is where we do it effectively. In terms of working with our industry partners, we work closely with the red meat industry for livestock agents. We work with SOFLA, which is the Federation for the Livestock Agents. We work with the department and even the South African Police Services in terms of stock theft at auctions. We do this to address biosecurity and animal health, and that is really something that is new to APAC, but I think it enhances the industry at large. How do we do this? We do this with a staff complement of 7 people, which includes me. It is really important for me to highlight the importance of the role that we play. If we are very serious about the work that we do, we should enhance what we do, even due to the fact that we're very lean and mean and small. But we proudly serve South Africa. We serve this beautiful industry, and we do this for all in South Africa. So that is my presentation. If you would like me to answer some of the questions that came from the previous session, I will gladly do so now. Bylaws which govern them at low local government legislation, I think it's just important to also give the following information. Santa did allude to this, but let me just give you some more information. In Chapter 5, Section 83, the Local Government Municipal Structures Act gives specific constitutional powers to municipalities. These powers are embedded in the Constitution in, I think, Section 156, if I'm not mistaken, and they allow a municipality the executive authority to administer local government matters, and this is listed in Part B, Schedule 5. This authority, amongst others, allows for the establishment, control, and operation of fresh produce markets by municipalities in their, what they call, areas of jurisdiction. And then, by virtue of this section, the administration of the market is assigned to local government only if it can effectively perform and administer this function locally, and if they have the required capacity to do so. So that is just the basis of legislation in the Constitution. Answer the question about discards or produce that is unfit for human consumption. This is a massive problem, I think, in South Africa, and taking back the words that I said about the disclaimer that we have a great responsibility to feed a nation. We must also have a good balance. If we sell produce that is not fit for human consumption, we could actually destroy the value chain going through fresh produce markets. We don't want our people to be sick. We don't want them to, even with a scary scenario, die of something that is purchased through a market which is not good for their health. There's specific health regulations and the Act, the Health Act, and then municipal bylaws that regulate this this dilemma. However, the solution does not lie in the fresh produce market alone. It rather lies with the value chain that must minimize the risk of contaminated food throughout. We must not take for granted that there will be, in the steps followed to a market, be contamination with produce that is perhaps being transported in an open truck, a truck that stands in the sun, internal diseases at farm level, etc., etc. So it's really important that we take hands with all role players to address the issue of the produce that is unfit for human consumption, and that we do so with great responsibility, because if we throw away food, we are not feeding the nation.
Can we conclude?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I am going to conclude the thank you once again for your opportunity to address you. I hope that was clear and concise. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Noel, for the presentation. We will now, honourable members, go into questions of clarity on the presentation of APEC that has been put to us by Mr. Knowles. But before we do so, honourable members, it has come to my attention that the honourable Deputy Minister Sdumo Dlamini, who is our Deputy Minister in Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Disease, born day today, 55 years old. We therefore want to extend our heartfelt wishes to him on this occasion of his birthday. We trust that it is an occasion filled with joy, gratitude and happiness. May God Almighty grant you many more years of service to our nation, and may He bless you with good health, strength, and abundance. Congratulations, Deputy Minister, once again.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister. Honorable members, let us then get into the questions of clarity on the APEC presentation. I will now invite the Honorable Kappe.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Happy birthday, GM. Moriru Muso Uki Mahono. Basuba Shwile Bawule. Chair, let me appreciate the presentation from Mr. Knowles. I think it's adding up, and I want to take his presentation now that I'm linking it, this institution, to the last week presentation of the bill. We know the custodian now, and I would understand that bill better now because of this presentation. Last week's bill indicated that one of the reasons for amendment is to include livestock agents, because apparently the focus has been on the fresh produce. And Francis' presentation indicates that they regulate fresh produce agents, export agents, and livestock agents. If the bill seeks to include the livestock as part of APEC or APEC bills, what has been the situation with the livestock? Because I see you have already included that you have been regulating them. But my understanding last week was that the bill is trying to cater also for inclusion of livestock agents. Now, I went back to the issue. What is the APEC with fidelity? They are self-funding this one, but how do they relate? Do they regulate this fund also, or what is happening? What is the relationship, the structure with the Fidelity Fund? I went back to the object of the bill, Chair. Interestingly is that the bill also seeks to provide for financial statements to be audited by the Auditor General. And I'm following the presentation on these billions that they overseeing that are involved with these agents and everything. What is their take? Are they happy to become now the entity that is being regulated? And just thinking about the entity that we have somewhere around this department that has issues with being regulated by the AG, are they ready be audited in a way? The trust accounts, I asked last week, what is the current situation, because the bill seeks to make provision for establishment of trust accounts. Is there a problem? According to APEC, of agents using business accounts instead of trust accounts. The last question, Chair, would be on that the minister, on the object of the bill, provide for minister to approve regional annual business plan and strategy of APEC. What is the current situation? I noted that Francois indicated that they are reporting by way of annual reports, but the object of the bill, the amendment, seeks to make provision for the minister to approve their strategy, their annual business plan. What is it that is happening? Do they just send the report currently and do as they please and just report, or what is happening in that? I just wanted to relate his presentation, now that is the custodian, with the amendment bill that is before us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Metape Afareste.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, yes, I wanted to find out about the dispute system, what is in place if people are unhappy or if there's a problem regarding payment, or if people say, the agents didn't do their work, or how does that the CSA that they work. Also, what is important is that price is established on two things, quality and then also availability. If there's not a lot of fighters on the market, obviously price go up. So what is the role of the agent to ensure that they advise farmers on when to bring produce to the market or not? Because it doesn't help if we are all bringing produce at the same time, then we get a poor price because there's too much let's say potatoes on the market during that period. So if we can just establish that the role of the agent in assisting farmers with that. And then Chairperson, something that I've been thinking about during the COVID lockdown period, especially in the beginning period when hawkers could not sell. What would be the thinking about bringing produce near to where communities live? I sometimes think, you know, farmers take produce from an area, and let's take rural areas where we know that, you know, people take produce to a market and then the hawkers take the produce back to the people, basically in the same vicinity. Are we thinking about something else? And I'm not saying for once that we must take away fresh produce from the market. I'm actually thinking of adding more, smaller ones. And that's why I asked that question about, you know, what was this? If you look at the four that we looked at, and I listened carefully to what was said about the Mokesi market, and I really want to still go and visit that Mokesi market. At the end of the day, it's an initiative that a specific farmer started. And just listen, I think as a portfolio committee, we need to go and visit that market. It's a private market. I haven't been there. I don't know how it works. But I think it's something that we need to look at and need to investigate, see, specifically because of what I said now. It's bringing produce nearer to the people. It doesn't make sense to me in rural areas for produce to go to a market and then come back with the walkers to, you know, 50 kilometers away to be sold, just as on price. So, thank you, Chair, for the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Payne. The Honorable Ntate Matias.
Honorable Chair, we've been welcomed by colleagues. Honorable Chair, both Mr. Noel and Mr. Stanford in their respective presentations didn't really help us in answering the question I asked. What overall legislative framework exists that the national fresh produce market falls under? Mr. Stanford was evasive. Mr. Novels refers to the Municipal Systems Act. Here we're talking about a national fresh produce market. The question I want to repeat for both gentlemen, what legislation exists under which national fresh produce market falls? Mr. Noel, in his presentation on APEC, he's able to refer to a specific act, Act 12 of 1992, under which APEC falls. What is it so difficult for them to tell us what national legislation does the national fresh produce market falls under? Now, coming back to the presentation of Mr. Knowles, slide 4 of the presentation says that the primary purpose, in this case, it's referred to as primary focus of APEC is to take care of farmers' interest as primary focus. The secondary focus of the council is to take care of the interest of the agents. So we're dealing with a double loop
system here. The question I want to put to them or to him is, where and how the public interest is served and taken care? Because the way I look at the APEC and the legislation under which it operates, there's no provision for taking care of the public, in this case, consumers. What does the legislation say about the interest of the public? Is it provided for? If not, isn't that the need that the legislation, the act must be amended to make provision for the interest of the public? Thank you much, Honorable Chair.
Yes, sir. The Honorable
Chair, I'm here. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also acknowledge the presentation by the entities, and one will like to then go straight to the questions that will then help me. I just wanted to understand that as much as they're operating and that they call themselves APEC, which is it's an umbrella of all smallholders markets in the country, I would like to go straight to their administration policies. I didn't hear anything that touches a part of the administration policies that will help us to understand as to whether they do take into consideration the following, which I'm going to just mention here. The safety, the occupational health and the safety policy and procedure, which I think I didn't hear them talking about it, as they deal with our smallholders. Financial management policy and process also not being touched on, which I think it might not be today, but in future they must let us have again some of those information, which will then assist us to understand what is happening. And then the other one, Chair, it will be on the issue of the procurement policy and procedure, on how do they then deal with the issue of helping the smallhold farmers with the issue of policies that are dealt with procurement and policy. What is the service level agreement that they have with the smallholders in those small markets? Then what are the fees? What is the do they have a policy on fees and the procedures that they deal with for those small farm holders on those small markets? Then I will be happy if they can be able to help me to understand that, how do they deal with the issue of assessment? Who should come into the market as a smallholder? Do they have a policy in place? If the policy is there, is there any grievance policy and procedure in place in case the smallholder was not satisfied that I was not admitted to be in this APEC? Because each and every APEC, they have their own administration policy. Even if thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Memaso. Kangeba Mpango, the Honorable Mbabama.
She has to leave for to Honorable Mbabama.
Present. Thank you. Sorry, Chair, can I take his Honorable Mbabama space? Or?
Okay, proceed. You're on the platform already. Proceed.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Chair, thanks to the presentation as well. I think I've asked a question with regard to Pretoria or Tshwane market. It was not answered. I just want to highlight that Farmers Weekly on the 17th July reported that this market is in a worst state it has ever been. Fresh Plaza also on the 6th February 2020 reported that it's on the brink of collapse. Can I carry on, Chair?
Yes, please continue.
Okay. And it was also stated by Food from Zante that the market is set to reopen. Obviously, the mid-rent market was going to carry on. I just want to know, really, from APEC, what is the situation at the Tshwane market? Is it operating? Is it not operating? What are the problems? And what is happening in terms of really ensuring that it's getting back to normal? The other question that I want to know, Chair, is that what do they do when the municipality fails to adhere to those regulatory requirements? Do they close the market? Do they engage? Or do they have any role to really play regarding that? Chair, one of the suggestions that I just want to put it out there, that, you know, in order for us to really successfully transform the market, we definitely will need some incubators program. But I know that they've spoken about the mentorship, but incubator programs to just ensure that, you know, the up-and-coming market, you know, are able to learn the rules of the game properly, because they're going to be severely punished when they go into the market and they don't comply. And I'm talking this listening to what the gentleman presented from the APEC regarding the compliant to the regulatory framework.
Thank you, and that appropriate.
Thank you, Baya Swishtadet. Chairperson Megan, I think Honorable Slappy mentioned it in terms of the amendment bill that is now in front of the committee. Does APEC foresee any challenges that they will face in implementing of the bill? Will there be any financial constraints or financial changes in terms of that? Will they be able to actually handle the expanded mandate that this bill then gives them? And how will their VARC faces, their workings change in terms of that? And then Chairperson, lastly, maybe just speaking to the Fidelity Fund, is there any outstanding claims or current litigation matters that they are dealing with of funds that will need to be paid out? I know that they said that there were legal fees over the last 5 years. So maybe just in terms of that, what are they currently standing at? And also, what are these challenges? What are these litigation matters that they have to deal with? Is it in terms of, I don't know, payments? What are these matters that they are handling? Chairperson, and I think my colleagues have done a good job of covering the rest. Thanks.
Thank you, Fare Priet. And the visitor, Kosen Kool, the Honorable Tabe Kool.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I'm afraid I don't have any question to the presenter, the last presenter. Thank you.
Sir Togoza, the visitor. The Honorable Montwedi, is he back with us or? Honorable Montwedi? Okay, we'll move on to Tim Velaz, the Honorable Papa.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also not having any question at the moment. I'm covered. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, any other honorable member who may wish to pose a question that I have not identified? Thank you, honorable members. Perhaps I will try and revert back to the department as my questions have not been answered and attended to. So if I may request the Deputy Minister as well as Acting Masodi to my previous question so that we can be able to attend to that. And I had asked if the department can indicate whether there is a linkage between volumes of agricultural produce and the existence of operational fresh produce markets. For example, can you indicate
which provinces produce the largest volumes of fresh produce and whether there are operational fresh produce markets in those provinces. And my second question was linked to the previous question that I've just put, and I wanted the department, as it has mentioned that for the Agricultural Produce Agents Amendment Bill, public hearings were only held in four provinces, namely Gauteng, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. And this was based on the presentation put to us. The department, therefore, should indicate whether the country's fresh produce mostly comes from these four provinces, and further furnish the committee with actual volumes that are produced in all provinces for different commodities. With that said, honorable members, I also noticed that whilst we were dealing with the first presentation, the department sent the CEA bill, that is SEIA of the bill, while they were presenting. And I would like to understand, are they going to present this bill to the committee? And lastly, honorable members, on APEC, which is based on legislation. In addition to Honorable Matthias's question, APEC's primary focus is to protect the interests of the farmer. Yet out of their 18 members that form APEC, only four members are farmers with representatives of agents, and to have half of APEC being representatives of agents, which is a secondary focus. Is this going to be rectified through the new bill? Thank you. I will now hand over to the executive, Honorable Deputy Minister and the Acting DG, Dr. Ramaswamy, and the officials of the department to dispense of the questions that honorable members have posed. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the question that you have raised, in particular arising from the first point you were raising. It's a very critical area to which we would have to respond. I may say, Chairperson, that the acting DG would hang in those, and indeed I just wanted to say how I appreciate you have raised that particular question and allow him and other members to respond to the other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think the issues that we the honorable members had raised were not responded to, mainly because of the time pressures. I think that my colleague Stanford Mantata was still on the platform trying to highlight them. But I think the time that he took in terms of responding might have given an indication that he had dealt with all the issues. I would like to make a proposal to the chair in terms of the responses that we take that day Elvis Nagana to respond to the issues. I will respond to the issues in terms of the overall legislative nomenclature that Honorable Chair and Honorable Matthias were asking. that he takes off on the other issues that were not responded to, and I'll respond to the other issues that were raised in terms of this, because there are a few issues in terms of the operations of the markets, in terms of the consultation that the department had on the bill that he will be able to apprise the committee on, and I'll deal with the other issues, legislative issues. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, and thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Just a few ones from my side that were not already answered by Mr. Mantaba during his comprehensive response to the questions that were raised by the Honorable Members. The first one to add on the issue around Section 7, reports, I think he touched on this, but just to clarify that these are reports emanating from committees that were established in terms of Section 7 of the Marketing of Agricultural Products Act as amended. This is Act 47 of 1996, which provide for these committees to be established whenever there is a need for an inquiry in as far as the issue around the marketing of agricultural products in the Republic is concerned. The other issue, I think, that was raised by the Honorable Chair regarding the issue around public hearings on the Agricultural Produce Regions Amendment Bill consultations that took place only in the four provinces, that is Gauteng, the Western Cape, KZN, as well as Limpopo. Indeed, this the extension to that question that requires that the committee be furnished with volumes produced in each province and the sales that take place through the markets that are located in each of these provinces to really get a picture in terms of whether there is that kind of correspondence in terms of the volumes produced in the various provinces versus the sales that eventually take place in the various markets that are located in these provinces. In this fashion, analysis can be made. But of course, if you look at provinces like Gauteng, for example, which has the two largest markets by volume, which is Joburg as well as Tshwane, you have a lot of food coming from the neighboring provinces, such as Limpopo, Mpumalanga, as well as the Free State coming to Gauteng, and the sales taking place there. But of course, this should be confirmed by the analysis that should be done with the available data within the department. And the such report can be furnished to the committee once done. That would be an interesting one indeed. So to determine what the cost. The other questions, I think, relating to the issues around the markets as well as the operations of the APEC itself, I think, would be properly and adequately be answered by the Registrar of APEC himself, Mr. Lowes. I think I will let it there for the moment. Thank you, DG and Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. If I may ask Mr. Nos to deal with the issues around the council, specifically around the interest.
Thank you, sir. I will gladly do so. I just want to check, am I audible?
Yes, you are audible. Please proceed.
Okay, I would like to, Honorable Klape, ask a few questions. First, about the inclusion of the Fidelity Fund for livestock agents. The purpose being, currently there is no Fidelity Fund, so we are not sure if all farmers are paid as soon as is possible. The Fidelity Fund will place this into perspective to ensure that farmers are adequately enforced and that there's fast payment. So I think that is one of the main purposes of the amendment for livestock agents. of, I hope I'm not missing something, trust account will obviously hand in hand with the Fidelity Fund support that. And I'll say something now about how we work with the Fidelity Fund. There was a question about the business plan. Do we do that haphazardly? The answer is no. We do the business plan. The business plan includes the budget for the next financial year. This is then provided to the 18 council members, which we have, and of course we have somebody representing the department there as well. And then once approved, that is contained in a report, and this business plan then also goes to the department and the minister. The AGM, or not the AGM, the Auditor General, to have such a person involved in the finances of APAC, in my own opinion, is a good idea. Not to necessarily audit the work that we've audited, but to have help. I think it's my eyes to make sure that we are doing our job and that we are doing our job well. I think those are all the questions from Honourable Kloppy. Can I move in to Honourable Steyn? Problem with payments, problems where people are not receiving adequate or proper assistance from agents. How we deal with that, we would obviously go into a process of consultation. We follow what we call the bottom rule, which is we give both parties the opportunity to respond. And then if we find that we cannot facilitate a solution, we will evaluate in terms of our legislative framework, and it could be that we go the legal way and even end up in court to enforce what must be done as foreseen and prescribed by legislation. The role of agents is very important in terms of communicating with the farmers in terms of the situation of supply and demand at markets. Yes, I will be the first one to acknowledge the fact that this is not always done. This is, however, embedded in the rules, and there's specific guidance as to the time frames in which communication should occur to farmers. Allow me an explanation. If a consignment is delivered at a fresh produce market and it's not sold, it must be communicated to the farmer within 3 days of the delivery if there is produce that is not unsold, or not sold rather. They should also communicate to farmers when to hold back. When there's an oversupply in South Africa, people will flood markets with produce. This is not always good, and this is to me, and this is a very important principle, that they should give advice to farmers not to flood markets, because it will ultimately and probably horribly affect the whole price discovery mechanism. There was a question about hawkers and getting closer to communities. For me, the answer is yes. If we look at the cost implication of communities that live next to farms and live far away, and produce goes to farms and then come back probably the same route, we have to do something about that. I don't have all the answers, but can offer one or two solutions, of which is one. Urban gardening is a thing. It allows people to grow their own produce, and they can feed communities by offering that to them free of charge. And then the second part of that is they can actually establish little business for themselves. And they will be very surprised to see that these little businesses will expand at an increasingly rapid rate. We've got fantastic examples. In Durban, there's an urban gardening project that is doing phenomenal. It's feeding the community, and it's also making a small profit. We must just remember one thing. I think if we set up other value chains such as urban gardening, it's not competing with fresh produce markets. As a matter of fact, I think it's expanding the service offering to South Africans. And as I said to you previously, we must be very, very sensitive to the fact that we need to feed a nation. And we must find creative ways to do this. We must explore all the options. We must think new about how we can feed the nation, and in doing so, feed them with healthy food. Healthy food being fruit and vegetables. Right. Then there was also an important aspect made that we should probably visit a private market. Mr. Ramaswamy, I hope you will forgive me for this, but I think we will, with your guidance and support, offer to perhaps take the committee to not only a private market, but I think to a large municipal market. It's important that you understand and see what happens at a market. A large market such as the Joburg market will give you a perfect insight into how markets effectively function as large, I would call it large entities. Private markets, on the other hand, gives you that perspective in initiative that was taken by a few individuals, which is phenomenal. With the permission of the department, I think I would offer this, and I think we must seriously explore visiting a market. I hope I answered those questions. Then, Honourable Matiasi, I hope I got that right. We talked about the legislative framework. I think you want to answer effective legislation governing markets. Answer's no. The existence of markets are found in the Constitution, and you must read that together with the Systems Act. But legislation governing a market per se, nationally, does not exist. The only proper legislation is found in municipal bylaws, and that is born from the municipality that must do legislation to ensure the functioning of a market. Right, so in terms of the difference between a farmer and an agent, and I said in my presentation our primary focus is to look after the interest of the farmer. Here's the very interesting thing. We are insuring the farmer without him being part of any piece of legislation within APAC, because our legislation serves to only regulate market agents, livestock agents, and export agents. In terms of consumers, no, we have two consumers on the council. They obviously will provide the input, but in terms of the legislation providing anything to consumers, not really. So the answer is no. Then if I can move to Honourable Mashlu, I think. You asked, I think a very important question is about what is happening in terms of admin policies like the Occupational Health and Safety Act. Yes, we have a policy. The next new important thing that we will all undergo is the PUPIA, is the Puppy Act. We had our training last week how to deal with personal and private information. We've got a financial policy. We've got a procurement policy. We don't just buy. We get three quotations. There's limitations on the amounts that even I can sign off. And just as a matter of interest, I cannot sign anything that is more than 10,000 rand. There's a financial committee that deals with anything. It's contained in our policies. So we are very, very focused on the way that we do ethical and clean business. And ask me why. I think it's important that if we are regulating an industry, it starts at home. So hence my answer to the Auditor General. By example, note that we agents. We get our fees and our monies from agents. And what we provide to farmers is basically insurance, for which they don't pay anything. And I will get to the way that we deal with that just now. Honourable Masipa asked the question about the Tshwane market. The Tshwane market is functioning. Is it functioning in the way that we want it to function? The answer is no. The market is dirty. It's not conducive if a farmer goes to a market which is dirty and not well maintained. Here's the problem that we are facing. There's no money that's forthcoming from the municipality to, amongst others, address maintenance. In addition, they also need more staffing. You've got three pillars on which a market is dependent. Actually four, but the three important ones include the following. First and foremost, security. If you go to a market and it's not safe, you won't go there. And the farmer will not deliver his produce there. The next one is maintenance. If you go to through the front gate and there's a big pothole, you will not go there. Maintenance is really important. The last important one is hygiene. We're dealing with food. If we do not ensure that there's food safety and with that food security, people will not go to the market. The fourth one that is overarching and focusing on the three elements is good management. You need a strong team of managers that are consistent in the way that they apply rules, that they work with the industry such as ABAC. And we need to be very careful that we step back and we point the finger. We need to take this through a project such as Project Rebirth and help them. I think it's in the interest of everybody here today to make sure that we make our fresh produce markets, we must restore them to their former glory. Former glory meaning that they must function well. We must serve our community. We must serve our consumers. We must provide food to the nation. So I'm really passionate about this, so please forgive me about the way that I'm conveying this, but I think we need to do so much more. What are we doing about the Tshwane market? We can contacting them, training, assistance, guidance. I think we can do so much more. Currently, just remember, somebody like APAC, we are a creature of statute, so I've got a limited framework, and I've got no jurisdiction over the market authorities per se. I only look at the agents, but herein lies the dilemma. The agents can only function well on a platform that is well-supported, clean, in a good state of operation. So on that basis, I can take the markets to task, and I do so. The last one that is important, it is, it's not easy for a farmer to enter in the agricultural value chain. But having said that, we have to smooth the way that they can enter, and we have to play our role. Hence our taking hands with the department to assist farmers proactively to inform them of the pitfalls of the assistance that we can provide, of the important role that they themselves must play, and not solely to rely on what is perceived to be a good system. They have to know what to look for, they have to know how to deal with this. And we are certainly not playing a large enough role, but we are playing our roles through training and visiting markets with them. Then, if I can move to Honourable Breert, the challenges that we foresee with the amendment bill. I think it might sound like a cliche, but we will need finances, and we will need staff to to deal additional staff to deal with the financials of things like a trust account, things like setting up a fidelity fund. Those things must be controlled. It must be done in a specific way, and it must be then very importantly be monitored. We function exceptionally well, my team and I. I probably work them to death, but that's the way we work. We work very focused, we work very hard, and with the foreseeable amendments, but we do so with passion to serve the industry. Not, do we have any outstanding claims? The answer is a definite no. If you will permit me a quick story about what happened in 2018. In 2018, we closed down three market agencies in November of that year. They were short on their trust accounts, and they were short simply because they were stealing from farmers. We took them through a disciplinary tribunal process. Remember, this is an independent process. We do the work, we do the preparation. We hand it over to the committee or the tribunal, and they then decide on the way forward. We closed down these three agencies, and in doing so, we had to pay our claims to the value of 10 million rand. And the detail of this is contained in the APAC 2019-2020 annual report, which is available on our website. However, if you close somebody down and you pay out money from a fidelity fund, it means that you've got a responsibility to take them to task. What we did, we took them and we liquidated all the role players in all instances, and ultimately, when this is done, we take this matter and we make a legal criminal case at SAPS. To the extent that we have a record of putting people in jail who are defrauding our hardworking farmers. Please hear me, and I'm very careful in the way that I want to convey this message. It's not an aspect to be proud of if you put somebody in jail. It is necessary if we want to protect this beautiful industry at all costs. So, having said that we paid out a lot of money in 2018, we will exhaust all our options to bring the culprits to book. Just in terms of any other legal matters, we are continuously having disciplinary tribunals for people that break the rules. Many of them are not serious, but we have to be consistent in the way that we apply the rules. One of the important things that I did not mention in my presentation is that we also, when we appoint an agent, that we do criminal vetting, that we only appoint somebody that's good. The outstanding legal matters and the outstanding criminal matters are all contained in our annual report, and we leave no stone unturned to make sure that we protect farmers, that we protect the Act, that we protect the Department, that we protect our beautiful industry. Mr. Chair, I hope I've answered all the questions. If I have not, I do apologize, but allow me to stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me from the onside apologize, because one of the issues that was brought by the Chair earlier on was around the socio-economic impact assessment that was done on the Act. Yes, this was done. It was done in 2017. And ordinarily, when we submit the bill itself, we should have also submitted this as per the agreements that we have had in the past, and also as guided previously. I really truly apologize for that, but it has been done in 2017. And in line with that, in my introduction, I have indicated that that is a 24-page document, and it will just highlight the issues that are there within the Act. And I don't think that, Chair, with my apology, that I would then say that it needs to be presented, because that would be an exercise in futility that honourable members could not have necessarily read that. But it's a self-explanatory 24-page that looks at various areas in terms of the economic impact, the social impact, and other impacts that you would have when you conduct a socio-economic impact assessment. The Chair had asked questions around the volumes that are currently produced in terms of fresh produce. I think the discussions today are looking broadly at fresh produce, but we should be aware, honourable members, that we are only discussing areas of aggregation that deals with almost just over 44% of what we are producing in the country. The others would be distributed in terms of vegetables, would be distributed through direct sales of farm or where they are contracts with other areas that sell sell to them. And you would also have those that go through processing, and the other 2% would be through the L2. So our focus today would be about of what we are dealing with. Of this 40 or so percent that you are talking about, most of these go through four markets. In actual fact, your Joburg Fresh Produce Market and your Pretoria Market are taking up the bulk of it, and you would have the Durban and Cape Town taking just under 10% of the market that you are talking about. But this does not necessarily mean that these are produced in Joburg or in Pretoria. You would have adjacent areas that produce that would be sending into the 21st produce, Limpopo, Northwest, and Mpumalanga sending through all to these markets to feed them. I think there is also an important issue in terms of the question that you have asked, Chair, that we might just need to explore, and it's a thought process that came, that the Department of Agriculture in the past had through engagements with the FSA, we had gone and did what we call the statistics on commercial agriculture. These were released last year, and it clearly, in summary, highlights where all the products are being produced. And if it's in line with what we have said, we will send in terms of the statistics, Chair. We can also ask the colleagues from FSA to also come and give this presentation on the statistics when it comes to overall agriculture, so that the portfolio committee can also appreciate the current state where we are with the commercial agriculture with 40,000 farmers or so. There were also legal questions that were posed, and I think APEC has responded to some of those, but I would like to also indicate that what Honourable Matthias was also asking was also starting to reflect in terms of influence. And therefore, as a statute of the law, I would say that maybe in consideration of the bill that's coming through, there are a few legal issues that need to be looked at around the interest and the protection of rights, and whether the current dispensation that we are having would be able to protect those rights as signified by APEC. I think that's something that can be looked at, honourable members. The other issue was the overall responsibility of the department when it comes to the market, maybe an overarching act that looks at this. There is no overarching act. What we have rebirth that we have engaged in is really a practice in markets, just to ensure that even if they have got to deal with municipal laws in different areas where they are, we also come in as a department to ensure that there is good practice all over the markets that we are responsible for. There is also an issue that was raised by Honourable Masipa on the incubator program. I think it's a thought worth pursuing, specifically in terms of how you then take best practice, and then you escalate it as and when you have got your trial size having proven that it can work. It's something that can be looked at, specifically if you look at the common issue that was discussed today within the portfolio committee to say, what about private markets and how do you bring them in? However, I'd like to also indicate that if you look broadly, what the nomenclature on how regulations and laws are being made is that at the highest level, you would have what I would call to say national legislation, which sets the minimum standards. Now, in each and every market that you would visit, you would have a minimum standard that would be applied. But once you go into a private market, then you are introducing private standards also, because those would need to be regulated by private standards over and above what you have, what we call a national standard. And therefore, there is a possibility inadvertently, if you introduce private markets, that you would also be introducing private standards that would also determine a private way of determining the shelf space that would be occupied by the farmers, if not protected in that area. But that's something that can be discussed as and when this comes into play. Honorable Sato was asking about the regulations in terms of livestock. Livestock was included in terms of the current act, which we are reviewing in 2018. What we were referring to was the issue around the regulations, how we regulate the systems. I think part of the objectives of the bill was to allow the minister to then start looking at the promulgating regulations in terms of the act. There are questions that were outlined. I think if we look at the issues raised by Honorable Marshall, is that you would have in any entity the application of various laws within an entity would then be taken into consideration when the bill would not necessarily relate to the Occupational Health and Safety Act, but implicit in terms of running of the business, in terms of you having a certificate to run a business, it will then be expected of you as a person who is running the business to also comply with other legislations that are applicable to the entity that you are running. There are issues, Chairperson, that we have got to look at maybe as we outline the act going forward, just going through my notes, Chair, that if we look at broadly the SEERs that comes in into play, and honourable members who then look at the quadrants that have been provided there, we suddenly realise that there's quite a lot of work that needs to happen in the fresh produce area in South Africa. Quite interesting in terms of what the honourable members were raising earlier on was the importance of the trade or what we call the baggy trade. And this found a lot of expression during the hard lockdown when we were at level 5 within South Africa. It signified the importance of this. And there are current studies that were done. The last study that I saw, I think it was during the third quarter or so, where it is estimated that what we are having as a market, an informal market in terms of food security, in the food sector, the informal market there is almost 340 billion that we are looking at. So the importance in terms of this cannot be overemphasized. Chairperson, if there are any other issues that we did not touch on as a department, we will be sending this through writing. But I would like to reiterate, Chairperson, in terms of statistics, that we have got fresh statistics in terms of commercial agriculture that would even form almost an imprint in terms of what the portfolio committee would like to know what's happening here. It has been presented to all the MECs, it has been presented to the minister, and I think that it's an opportune time maybe to also take the portfolio committee through that as part and parcel of just reorientating the debate around the fresh produce market and where we have got the production happening on the fresh produce market. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thank you, Masodi, the acting DG, and the officials of the department, and the responses from Dr. Knowles, honorable members. That brings us to the end of our session in terms of the two presentations. We will take, therefore, this opportunity to release the officials and the department. But before doing so, as we have two sets of minutes to dispense with, allow me to thank the entities as well as the department, the officials as led by the acting DG Ntate Ramasodi, and the executive, in particular Usibal Kuk, the Honorable Deputy Minister Tamim, for their participation and engagements that we have had this morning. And we wish Baul Dlamini to have a fabulous day on this bond day of yours. We will therefore allow you to take leave as we proceed with our other business of the committee. Honorable members, let us then turn to our minutes of, I think we have two sets of minutes which we can request the secretariat to put up, so we can be able to deal with minutes of the 16th and the 23rd of February. Can we please mute our microphones and ask the secretariat to upload the minutes of the 16th of February? Thank you. There we go, honorable members, with the minutes of the 16th of February. Page 1, page 3, Honorable Memo, so it's the name of a place
located in the Eastern Cape, between the area of Sofimvaba St. Mark's on your way crossing the former Transkeian border in on your route to Queenstown. It is located on the
R61. Oh, thank you very much. Can you just call it so that I can hear what how you're calling it?
Kwachu.
Kwachu. Thank you very much.
Most welcome.
This one I can also assist the chair. Kwachu.
There we go. Honorable members, that's our minutes of the 16th of February 2021. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Papa.
Thank you, Chair. I move that the minutes should be adopted as a true reflection of the proceedings.
Thank you, Honorable Kappa moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 16th of February, of the meeting we held. Can I have a second?
Chairperson, I will second the motion to adopt the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Britt, for seconding the adoption of the minutes. We'll move to matters arising, honorable members. Page 1, page 2, page 3, if no matters arising, honorable members, we'll take it therefore that minutes of the 16th of February 2021 have been duly adopted. Thank you. Let us move to the last set of minutes of the 23rd of February 2021. Ask the Secretariat to share those minutes. Thank you. Honorable members, here are the minutes of the 23rd of February. Let's proceed on page 1.
Chair?
Yes.
On page 1, Chair. I appear on the members who are present, but I wasn't present, Chairperson. I think the correct information is that it is below that I apologize and expect that I was engaged in another comment.
Yes.
My name should not appear on the members present.
Present, it should appear on apologies.
Yes.
Well noted, Nkosi Nkulu. Honorable Nkosi Qebekulu, we will ask the Secretariat to adjust that accordingly. Thank you, the Secretariat, for rectifying that, and we thank Kundabezita for having corrected that.
honourable members, page 2. Members, and we have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 23rd of February 2021. Honorable Papa, your hand is up.
Chair, I move the meaningful reflection of the proceedings.
Honorable Kappa moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 23rd of February 2021 as a true reflection of the meeting we had. And we have a seconder. Honorable Marco.
Thank you, Chair. I here stand to second the minutes of the 23rd February as a true reflection. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Marshall. Second, the adoption of the minutes of the 23rd of February 2021. Honorable members, are there any matters arising? Page 1. Honorable Marshall, your hand is up. Page 2. Page 3. Remind you of our honor.
Okay, thanks. I did not to interrupt you as you're about to adjourn the meeting, but I thought I needed to raise this point, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, with your indulgence, Parliament on the 10th of November 2020 passed a motion for the establishment of a joint committee investigation to investigate the living and working conditions of farm workers and dwellers and provide a time frame within which the joint committee should report back to Parliament. I would want to know, and for the Chair to take us into his confidence, as to at what stage the preparations are by the joint committees.
Thank you, Honorable Matthias. I was wanting to close off in my closing remarks on this. As you would have seen, Honorable Members, that we have scheduled a meeting for Friday to have a joint committee meeting on both the Labour and the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. We are preparing to have such a meeting with our other colleagues, but it has come to our attention in the preparatory work that we are doing that Labour will be having their main call on Thursday, which is the Management Committee meeting, and they have a committee meeting on Friday. We are still in discussion, even up until late yesterday. The Secretariat was speaking to the Secretariat in the Portfolio Committee on Labour. And we hope that we will be able to have this session on Friday and continue with the work that is before us. We have been given, Honourable Members, a timeline until the 30th of November to conclude that work. And of aspects able to look into in preparation for that work. It may speak to some of the things that we looked into as preparatory work in ensuring that this work is indeed done and looked into. So with your indulgence, Honourable Members, as we are engaging at the level of the Management Committee, we have looked at scheduling key activities for the committee to look into and have been able to break down our approach in four phases that can then talk and map a way forward. This is what we will intend to bring before the Joint Committee. But because Honorable Matthias has raised it, I will share a thought process which I must put a disclaimer that it's not a concluded process, just for us to have something to bring before the joint sitting and be able to speak around it. On phase one, we have looked into it to focus on scanning and mapping of the terrain, and associated with that, with key interventions, we will then have to to define the scope of the project, agree on an approach we would like to undertake, and then have documentation and consideration of work emanating from other committees and parliamentary projects. We do envision the time frame for phase one to be between March and April. We then look into what phase two may consist. We believe that in phase two we need of the problem and outcomes, and our key interventions in phase two will be to have briefing sessions by the department's concerned, workshops and roundtable discussions with stakeholders, and then to proceed to having an oversight visit and also host public hearings. We envision, honorable members, to have this done between July and September, and phase three will then look at a synthesis and recommendation, which in its key intervention will consist of a synthesis of findings and development of recommendation for one, enforcement of legislation, two, policy review, and three, legislative amendments. We do look into our time frame to have this in and around October and November of early November of this year. Last but not least is concluding the process with phase four, which will be reporting to the National Assembly or Parliament. We regard our key intervention in this regard will be to ensure that we have the adoption of the report and to table it for the consideration of the National Assembly by the 30th of November 2021. This is the discussions we are having, honorable members, and we hope to bring this before a joint committee session where we can be able to deliberate on the issues. But as I've said, the matter is with the Secretariat to engage with the Secretariat of the Portfolio Committee on Labour to see if we can have a time scheduled that allows for a joint sitting of the two committees so we can be able to proceed with our work. For now, Honorable Matias. Mr. Matias.
Honorable Chair.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, for an opportunity. Taking us through the preparations on the part of our portfolio committee and the stage at which the process is, and further taking us through in terms of the phases that you envisage to follow together with the Department of Employment and Labour. Lastly, Honourable Chair, even though you have made a disclaimer on the draft proposed program, which is yet to be presented to the Department of Employment and Labour, would it be permissible, Honourable Chair, if we can have a look at that, if you so agree, allow Committee Secretary to send it to us Of course, we've a disclaimer that is not yet for publication or for circulation. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matthias. We cannot put the cart before the horse, as I did say in my earlier input that this is still with the Secretariat. Please let us allow them to be able to have a joint sitting allocated, and this will be put in a joint sitting for honorable members to engage. And as we always do, we don't have a sitting before we have received information. We will make the necessary information available as and when we get confirmation of our joint sitting meeting. Therefore, I would request and beg for your indulgence, honorable members, as this matter is being attended to. With that said, honorable members, let me remind you of the House sitting at 2 o'clock and wish you a prosperous and fabulous day ahead and a great week ahead of us. This brings us to to closure of the meeting, and I'd like to thank all of you for your attendance and for your input in today's speech. I thank you. Everything is okay.
Thank you, Chairperson.